we're back. Yes, we have returned. We're finally back for another episode of First Pitch 305. This is season 2, episode 3. And I am your host, Alex Aguirre. And joining me, yes, he is here. He is joining me for season 2, the legend of Lemon City Live, my partner in crime for Marlins coverage. And he covers as well UM baseball. He definitely has covered FIU. He's everywhere with Lemon City Live. Gabriel Garcia, what's going on, my man?
Hey, man, it's been a while. Thanks for having me. And your words are very generous. I feel humbled.
You know, you are one of the original Lemon City Live members. You're a legend, practically. You know, everyone knows Gabriel Garcia in the Marlins press box. When you walk in, everyone's like, whoa, the legend has returned.
Yeah.
But no, what's going on, man? How are you?
Good, you know, just keeping an eye on the Marlins in spring training, keeping an eye on college baseball with the Canes and FIU, and, you know, also looking forward to the upcoming Canes football season and the Dolphins. So it should be a very exciting and fun year for sports. Also, I can't forget about the Florida Panthers, man. They're playing really good right now. They're the best hockey team in the league right now, hands down.
The thing is, though, do they want to get the President's Cup, you know?
No, they don't. When you love baseball, I think there's a degree of being superstitious. And even though it's a different sport, I think sports fans in general are superstitious anyway. But, yeah, I don't want the President's Cup because of the curse. I think that curse exactly is as powerful as, I don't know, say the Madden curse as an example.
Or in baseball, you know, curses, the Red Sox curse, the Cubs curse, like going almost 100 years or over 100 years of not winning it all. Yeah, there's superstitions and sports pretty much go hand in hand. But, you know, yeah, I think the Marlins are going to be relying or need to rely on their superstitions of their own because things aren't looking good. You know, in this episode, we're going to be talking a lot, pretty much just a spring training update. It's been a while since we've done an episode. So we got a lot to talk about. Well, not really in terms of transactions. It hasn't been much, but there has been a signing. There finally was a signing. And the Marlins signed Tim Anderson to a one-year deal. And they found a shortstop or some depth at that position. Because as Gabe told me prior to the episode, John Birdie they're saying that John Birdie is going to be the opening day shortstop. But Gabe, tell me about your opinions and what's your take on pretty much the only signing the Marlins have done, MLB contract signing the Marlins have done this offseason. What's your take on this?
Well, I wanted Tim Anderson because partially I just really, really wanted them to have a more active offseason, but I understood because, you know, we have a new GM, Bendix is getting stuff ready, he's working on the infrastructure, you know, organizing in-house, so to speak. So it was to be expected, but they had a really quiet offseason. You know, even though they added Anderson, who's a former AL batting champion, I looked around, and the other notable acquisitions we had was Trey Mancini, Christian Betancourt, who's going to be paired up with Nick Fortes, and he's got a really strong arm, by the way, and Nick Gordon. Outside of that, what else did we do? The offseason, you could say, is disappointing. But, I mean, it was to be expected with Bendix, you know, taking over the helm.
For sure. When moves like that happen, especially in the front office and behind the scenes, you don't see many franchises start dipping into their pockets more and more and more. And it's sad. And I've said this before already, but it's just sad to see because they're coming off a pretty damn good season for their standards, going 84-78 and having their first postseason appearance in 162-game season in 20 years. So, yeah, it was a lot to be happy for, a lot to, you know, look forward to for the following season. But when you're a small market team and you do front office moves like that, yeah, like you're not going to be spending a lot of money in the offseason. On the contrary, you're going to have you're trying to get a better feel of your team and work from the ground up in terms of what we need to address at the minor league level and at developing young talent, because that's where Bendix is coming from with Tampa Bay. That's what they're known for is, you know, barely spending money, rarely spending money, might add, and developing young talent. They're great at drafting. They're great, especially in the pitching department. And we'll get to that in a bit in the Marlins rotation or what is left of the Marlins rotation. But yeah, when you know, front office, when there's front office changes like that on a small market team, they're not going to be spending a lot of money. So Tim Anderson is pretty much the lone highlight, other than Josh Bell wanting to come back and agreeing to come back to the Miami Marlins. But it's not really saying much other than that. Just Tim Anderson, and then some familiar faces returning as non-roster invites like Devin Smeltzer. I think Jonathan Davis as well from last year. And as you mentioned, Trey Mancini. And you add it up all together, and that's a failing grade for the for an offseason. What do you think, Gabe?
I'd give him I'll be generous and give him a C-, because honestly,
that is generous. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very generous, only because of Bendix. If this was, let's say, another GM, like a insert generic GM or Kim, I, with our expectations, especially from last year, this is a D. This is a D. But I'm going to be...
If Kim was here, yeah.
Yeah, it would definitely be a D. Actually, it would be a D minus if she was still here, or an F even. Because, you know, because of the work that they've done, the team that they've built, that gave them, you know, that pushed them into the playoffs, six games above 500, definitely. But for Bendix, because of the circumstances, I'm going to be a little more generous and give him a C minus. But I'm still, yeah, it's a disappointing offseason. No doubt about it. There's no... There's nothing really to do sunshine and rainbows on this one, because we didn't really improve. Not really. Not compared to other teams, for sure. We made moves that improve us, if you want to even call it that, at the margins at best. However, I do feel really good about the pitching, you know, without these injuries going on and whatnot. If the team can stay healthy, it's going to be one of the best in the league, which is the, I guess you could say, silver lining in terms of the team's expectations, and a little preview of what I think is going to play out later in the season.
Yeah, I feel like there's going to be some stuff to look forward to, as you mentioned, like the improvement in the catching department with Christian Betancourt, a full season of Tanner Scott as the closer, you know, but health is the main thing, especially with guys returning like Avi Garcia, who's been a no-show pretty much his whole tenure with the Marlins. Riddled with injuries, slumps, you name it, he's definitely had it. So yeah, they're relying a lot on in-house and in-house development, in-house improvement from all the returning players, and hopefully they can repeat, you know, their singular performances and combine all that into another winning season, which is, I think, very, very far-fetched and very, very high expectations. And, you know, the main thing, I guess, moving on to our next part of our episode, the main thing, I guess, that people were looking forward to the most, because we all knew the offense was going to be a big, big question mark, but the stability of the rotation, even with Sandy sidelined, it was a given already for the season. Going into spring training, it was like, okay, well, there's a lot of, you know, depth at that position, or so we thought. You know, it's crazy how a lot can change in a small amount of time, because now there's a lot of question marks within the starting rotation, other than Jesus Luzardo. And Gabe, let's talk about this. Let's break down the Marlins pitching rotation and give some updates here as well to some of the pitchers who were expected to be ready or in the starting rotation for opening day. Let's start off with Edward Cabrera, because he's the most recent one. He is diagnosed with right shoulder impingement. And he's one of a few pitchers. Braxton Garrett's another one. He's not going to be ready for opening day. So that's right there. Two out of your top four starters in the rotation, not ready for opening day. Gabe, what do the Marlins need to do to fill the rest of the rotation? What's left in the pitching department?
So prior to this week, you know, like about a week ago, let's say, my rotation prediction was Jesus Luzardo, AJ Puck, Yuri, Edward, and Trevor. And now it's a little bit chaotic because, yeah, you know, Edward Cabrera is listed with his problem with his right shoulder. Now Yuri exited today's game during the first inning, if I'm not mistaken, due to discomfort from a broken nail in his right middle finger, which restricts his pitching repertoire, because I think right now he's only using two pitches and not his full his full arsenal, which is fine because it's spring training. But now that all that's going on, we're going to find out how extensive these injuries are in the coming days. And this is among other injuries, like JT. He's dealing with neck spasms. If I'm not mistaken, he's going to go see a specialist. Braxton Garrett, you already mentioned. So right now, I've got, what is it, from my prediction, I've got two guys that are questionable right now, Jiří and Edward. Luzardo's okay. AJ's okay. Trevor's okay. Later in the season, you know, we can rely on Braxton and we can, you know, tap Max to see how it goes. So the thing that they could do right now, especially if it's just one pitcher, like if it's Jiří or Edward, not both, but one of them, Ryan Weathers, he would be the person to be tapped in to be slotted. Because right now, if I'm not mistaken, he's pitched about almost 14 innings and he's got a 1.32 ERA, 17 strikeouts, and a whip of 0.80. So right now, if I'm looking at stock, Weathers is going up.
Oh, for sure. He's definitely made the case for himself to crack this spring training roster. And he looks great. And it could be the Marlins have four out of their five starters lefties. And at this point, beggars can't be choosers. That's what the Marlins have right now in their arsenal. And they're going to have to run with it. And still, though, yeah, they have Trevor Rogers. But what does he have to offer? It's been a long time since he's pitched. And the last few times he's been on the mound, it hasn't looked pretty. You know, so that's another question mark as well. But you have to throw him in there because the Marlins are going to be down without Braxton and Edward for opening day. And as you mentioned, as of now, the news will come out soon. But as of now, we don't know how long, you know, it's going to take for them to return and be fully healthy. The only concern I have with Jiří, I think he'll be fine. It's just, you know, one of those like finger issues, nothing too crazy. But the only concern now I have with Jiří is this something that's going to be nagging? You know, like pitchers who get blisters, that's something that's with them for their whole career. And it's just one of those nagging things that's, you know, at first person that comes to mind is Josh Beckett. That's something that he's always had within his career. And it's kind of like, you know, it's just lingering all the time. I'm not saying this is going to happen to Jiří, and I'm not saying this is going to derail his career by no means necessary, but I'm just saying that this could be something that becomes an annoyance. But other than that, though, you have Luzardo, Jiří, and AJ Puck. You mentioned AJ Puck. Let's talk about that a little bit here. He was the closer, or the de facto closer, for the Marlins starting last season, and then it ended up being Tanner Scott, and he performed amazingly to close out 2023. But AJ Puck was the go-to guy for the ninth to start off last season, and then he started off great, and then he kind of, you know, flamed out a bit. He wasn't really, you know, I guess maybe that role was too much for him in Oakland. He never really performed as a closer. He was more of a, you know, mid reliever or seventh, eighth inning guy. So, but now he's a starter. And I, you know, Gabe, does that move surprise you at all? Or did you know that maybe AJ has prior experience as a starter, you know, before, you know, in the minor league level? Like, what's your take on AJ Puck transitioning from the bullpen in his whole major league career? He's been pretty much a bullpen. He's been used out of the bullpen. Now the Marlins are saying all of a sudden, oh, AJ, you're going to be one of our starters. And they've been using him as a starter in spring training. What do you think about that?
He's been a pleasant surprise because, like you said, he's been in the bullpen pretty much all his career. And now he's transitioned to becoming a starter. And even though it's a small sample size, he's had about three starts. He has yet to give up a run. Granted, it's only 8 1/3 he's pitched, but he's got 15 strikeouts. And at one point, I don't know, I have to check, but at one point he only allowed one hit. But that's not the thing for me. What calls out to me is his strikeouts. He's got 15. He looks like he's ready to be the number. Well, we'll see how the bullpen shakes. I mean, not the bullpen, the starting rotation shakes out in the coming days. But right. AJ's looking like number two, number three right now.
Wow.
Right behind Jesus. And
okay,
I am looking forward to see how he does on the mound. Now, whether this translates to success, that's way too early. Plus, it's spring training. Spring training is player evaluations and shaking off rust. Stats are only a small indicator of how a player is doing at that moment, really early into the year, you know, like preseason, At the end of the day, these games don't matter. What matters is that these guys work on their mechanics, work on whatever it is they do at the plate. In his case, you know, what he does on the mound. And the season's really going to show, especially in like those first, because I'm generous with pitchers. I like giving them at least 5 starts to see how they do. And I'm going to do the same thing for Puck. I'm going to give him about 5-6 starts and see how it goes, because right now his small sample size is showing that he's going to be great. He's making a good transition, but let's see how it goes when he takes on teams early in the season. And if he still has his starting position by, say, June, how he does against, you know, by then it's, you know, the dog days of summer, and how he performs against teams that no longer can say, oh, well, you know, it's April, it's early. A lot of players start off slow and then they ramp up. So, in other words, I'm happy with the transition. It's a pleasant surprise. I'm very hopeful, especially now that we need depth and we need arms, not only in the wake of Sandy going down, but, you know, with these 2 additional injuries that we got to find out how extensive they are. But, you know, he brings necessary depth, like I said, and I'm looking forward to his performance as a starter. Hopefully he adapts well, because, like you said, he's been a reliever for all of his career. My hope is that he becomes a solid contributor to the team that will badly need him. Because if we don't have the starting pitching, especially the way things are going at the plate, that's our last hope. I think part of the reason why everyone's very excited, or at least, you know, not very excited, but hopeful that we can repeat the success from last year is on the starting pitching, to be honest. We'll see how things go at the plate, but I feel that, at least for me, my optimism stems from the pitching, flat out.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, seeing how successful Puck is right now in spring training. I'm really happy for him as well, especially how last season went for him and like kind of the roller coaster ride it was. And he's being a team player, you know, being asked last year to be a closer, not really experienced doing that. He did it and he had his bumps and bruises, but it's a good learning experience for him. And now he's being asked to be a starter. My only concern is, and you mentioned this as well, Gabe, is the dog days of summer. He had his bumps and bruises, as I mentioned, during that time last year. Now he's in a different role, and being a starter is different than being a reliever, because you can be called upon day to day, while as a starter you got more of a set schedule every 5 days or give or take. Now as a starter, though, you got to be able to expand, and you're, and AJ Puck, he's a power pitcher, you know, throws in the upper 90s, you know, and as a reliever you can get away with that and kind of going all maxed out for one inning maybe, or like, you know, 4 or 5 batters. But I'm really curious now to see, especially when the season starts and facing lineups at full strength and not spring training lineups, how he does with his stamina, how he can, you know, go through a lineup for a second time. Because at the end of the day, like as you mentioned, Marlins are lacking arms. So they're not, I hope they're not asking him to go 2 or 3 innings. This is a type of a starter, you know, that they need to go 4 to 6 innings per start. It sounds like a tall ask, because we really haven't seen him do it in his career, but I am kind of excited, because he is, you know, a hard throwing left-handed pitcher, and he can, you know, he can carve out something new for him and extend his career. And you know what? If things don't work out for him as a starter, they know that they can put him back in the bullpen and that he can still find success there, because he's already experienced in coming out of the bullpen in different scenarios as a closer, as a setup, as a long relief option as well. You know, who knows if it doesn't work out being a starter. So he's giving himself, at least from a career perspective, he's giving himself options and different avenues to take in the long run. So I'm curious to see how AJ Puck performs. But you harped on this a bit when it comes to, yeah, everyone was kind of curious and excited for the pitching department, but this lineup, this offense, Gabe, I know, as you mentioned, it's just spring training and it's a very, you know, minute, you know, sample size, but still, it's concerning, like really, really concerning, like going into the season, because spring training is almost done. And the lack of power and the lack of pretty much everything in the offensive statistics that this, you know, that the Marlins are displaying in spring training, Gabe, like, are you super concerned about this Marlins offense, or you think I'm just kind of like being a little too scared, a little too nervous going into the season?
To be really honest, I wouldn't be hitting the panic button or anything, but there is reason for concern. The concern is valid, to be real honest. So, not counting the split squad, they've been outscored, by my count, if it's correct, 47-21. That's how much they've been outscored, wow. Not counting split squads. And their averaging, if my math is correct, 1.6 runs a game. But it doesn't matter. It could be 1.8, let's say. It's still less than 2 runs a game. You will win very few games if that is the consistent number throughout the season. You can forget about a winning record. You can forget about finishing 500. And that doesn't even discuss playoffs. Playoffs? What playoffs? So that's the big concern for me. I'll give you a couple numbers really quick. For example, Josh Bell. In 25 at-bats, he's hitting 200. Trey Mancini, one of our acquisitions. In 22 at-bats, he's hitting 227. Jake Berger, 143 and 28 at-bats. Nick Gordon, he's a bright spot, 308 with 26 at-bats. Here's one that people would probably – we're more worried about him staying healthy for now. Jazz Chisholm, 217 and 23 at-bats. Tim Anderson, one of our main
acquisition.
Our main acquisition. 182, if my numbers are correct, in 22 at-bats. Jesus Sanchez, 333 with 24 at-bats. And Avi, 179 with 28 at-bats. And before I forget, Christian Betancourt, 250 with 20 at-bats. So I've pretty much touched up on our familiars and our acquisitions, with the exception of one. And he's the bright spot, the really bright spot. Luis Arraez, at one point he was hitting 1-for-16, and then he bumped up his batting average to 211. And now, if I'm not mistaken, he is hitting 357. So thumbs up there, because I would have been even more concerned if he was struggling. But it looks like he's fine, so I'm not worried about him. But, there's more than one player on this roster. The lineup is going to be pretty much 9 guys at the plate. And we're not going to win with just Arraez hitting. Everyone else has to step up. And like I said, the team is averaging less than 2 runs a game, and there is concern. There should be concern. Yeah, it's spring training. That's true, 100%. For all we know, this is just an anomaly for most of these players. Hopefully it is, because if it is, coupled with this really talented starting rotation and a bullpen that can get the job done, we'll be fine. We'll be fine. So that's my main concern heading into the season. My top concern is going to be the hitting. That's where I'm going to be watching things, specifically at the plate.
And that's awesome. Thank you, Gabe, for sharing all those stats with us and our listeners, and to kind of, I guess, give us a better picture of the level of concern, I guess, fans or internally the Marlins should have. I get it, especially as we talked about going into this episode. You're like, the Marlins aren't expected to do or be better than they were last year, but we weren't expecting a massive drop off either. And the way this lineup is performing, the way this offense has been performing, it's looking like that. Still really, really early to tell. Things can click come April, and they can turn it around and be a competitive ball club. I'm not saying they're going to start smashing out of the park and start, outscoring teams left and right. But, they can still turn it around and be competitive and keep themselves close in games. But that gets me to another point when it comes to the offense, is the lack of power. Not only, they're not, Arraez can get on base and he can hit all the singles and doubles in the world and have a batting average of above 330, 340. But if no one can bring him in, then it's just, as you mentioned, they're going to be scoring 1 to 2 runs a game. And and Jorge Soler leaving, do you think it's going to bite the Marlins in the butt in the long run? Or you think that the Marlins are, not missing out and they'll be fine internally? Or that's what, because Bendix, his explanation in spring training of when reporters asked him of Soler leaving and signing with the Giants, he was like, well, we have, and these aren't his words, but basically he was saying that, well, they have Berger, Jake Berger, and Josh Bell, a full season of both of them. Because as we all remember, they were acquired at the trade deadline last season. So his, I guess, reasoning is like, well, we have Soler, I mean, well, Soler's gone, but we have Berger and Bell for a full season that can, you know, replenish and bring us more depth, you know, with power. And I saw a stat somewhere on Twitter. It was like through 17 games or something like that, the Marlins only have like 5 home runs. Nobody has more than one. And so if that's kind of like you mentioned, Gabe, that's kind of the recipe on offense going into this season, then the Marlins are in trouble, in historic trouble as well. And a couple seasons ago, they were a historically bad offense. Like they were breaking records that were over 50, 60, 70 years old. Major League Baseball, like offensive records. So I really, really hope they don't go down that road again. I don't think so. There was a lot more talent on this team than there was on that roster that was historically bad offensively. But, you know, it's just a lot of question marks and a lot of, I think, so much reliance. Everything, I think it's just all relied on the players improving from last season and just staying healthy. And it's for a lot of guys. Abby, Jazz, you know, the starting rotation as well with Braxton. I mean, Braxton Garrett, he'll be coming back from injury. Edward will be coming back from injury. Trevor Rogers is coming back from injury as well. Like, it's just, yeah, they got bodies, but there's just so many question marks within the roster, within the opening day roster as well, because all of these guys are going to, you know, crack the opening day roster. So, Gabe, this we're going to kind of start rounding things off here in this episode. What is your prediction for this team in terms of what they're going to finish off? Last year, they were 84-78, finished third in the NL East. Nothing has changed in the NL East. I think teams have gotten better, actually. They're one of the toughest divisions in baseball. You know, they're playing, you know, against the Braves, the Phillies. Phillies eliminated them last year in the playoffs. The Braves, believe it or not, had the best season in franchise history last year. And this is the Braves we're talking about. So they're coming off a season like that. And the Marlins signed Tim Anderson. That was it. You know, so what is your outlook? What is your project? What are your projections for this season? And, you know, as a Miami local, what can you tell fans? What can you tell local fans and try to convince them to come out to the ballpark when I just mentioned that Tim Anderson was their lone bright spot in the offseason? Like projections, fan outlook, give me all that, Gabe, because I feel like, you know, it's been, like I said, a disappointment.
Well, touching up on Soler, considering the list of acquisitions or lack thereof for this offseason, oh, it's going to bite them in the behind. Oh, it's going to bite them for sure. Yeah. Now, when it comes to the outlook, we were 6 games above 500 last year. Mm-hmm. And what I'm about to say is going to be coming across as very generous, but it's because I have the hope that the team stays relatively healthy. The starting pitching remains consistently good all year, and that the hitting gets cleaned up and gets much better at the plate. I'm talking averaging 3-4 runs a game, which is a huge ask at the moment, but it's doable. So with all that said, I have them finishing 82-80, so 2 games wow. above 500, which is a change of 4 considering things. That's very generous. But the only reason I'm going with that, like I said, is because I have the hope that Tim Anderson has a much better season than expected, especially compared to last year. The hope is that 2023 is an anomaly and that, you know, we have a full season of Jazz and Arise continues being a hit machine and that others step up when, you know, they have to. Because I'd rather have a guy go 1-4, but in that one hit, he had a running scoring position and brought him in, then 3-4, and all he did was hit singles. I'd rather have that.
Yeah.
You have to get on base, of course. So for that 1-4 guy, you know, he doesn't get on base and whatnot. But I guess what I'm looking for at the end of the day is getting on base. And if we have few opportunities, fine. To make the most out of those opportunities. That's all. Because my fear is that we get people on base and it ends the same way that it always does. Ending any double plays, rally killing 6-4 threes, you know.
Strikeouts, and runners scoring position. Yeah.
Runners in scoring position, like basically stranding a ton of runners. People that we have on second and third or a guy on third, you know, that's what I don't want to see. I'd rather, if we're going to have fewer opportunities, to make the most of them. That's it. And I want to see also, especially behind the plate, that we defend against stolen bases better this year, because they stole a lot of bases off of us. And now with the addition of Betancourt, you know, with Nick, the goal there is to cut that down and to protect, you know, second base a little bit more. And on our end, I would like to see us aggressive on the base pads, stealing bases when we can to move up the runner. Because like I said, with a runner on second, we can bring that guy in with a simple single. It doesn't have to be the long ball. I have seen teams live and die by the long ball. Hey, man, chicks dig the long ball, but I'm just not crazy about home runs. Like, home runs are great in clutch in clutch situations, but I'd rather have our team play consistently hitting, 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 and hitting, stringing together hits, putting up one, maybe two big innings that, you know, is more than enough for us with the pitching that we've got. A lot of that is a big ask, actually, especially right now how the spring training is going. But if the team can get better at the plate, they can replicate the success of last year. That's what we're hoping for. We're hoping that the familiars of last year, coupled with the acquisitions that we've gotten, the few amount that we have, could combine and do well on offense while the pitching does its thing and the bullpen, you know, protects the leads as they're supposed to. And for Puck, now that you said that, you know, earlier, I wanted like a quick thought on Puck.
Sure.
That's part of the excitement and part of the fear for me. He's transitioning into a role that he is no longer pitching, as you pointed out, one or two innings. He's expected to put down, for the sake of the bullpen, 5, 6. Man, if he could go 7, even better. But yeah, I'm, you know, shocked. 5 or 6. And he'll be taking on, as you mentioned, hitters that, unlike a reliever, they see you once. Well, that's going to change when he goes through the lineup a second time, even a third time. So hitters have other opportunities to lock onto him. And that's going to be where I want to see how he does. I'm going to be paying attention, not at that hitter's first at bat, but the second and the third. Because as you pointed out, you know, it's more opportunities. And now Puck is in a new role, taking on hitters that are going to get more than one shot at him. So my outlook is 2 games above 500 with the hope that the offense and the team, you know, replicates the success of last year and stays healthy. But in a worst case scenario, if like the offense flounders and the team, you know, the chemistry goes out the window and the team loses the will and whatnot, I could see them as far below as 10, 12 games below 500. And for the fan outlook, if I'm talking to fans, I would say, with regards to the short term, we're in good hands in the pitching. We have to wait and see when it comes to the hitting. We have to just, you know, hold out hope. For the long term, in Bendix we trust. Because I think he can bring the success that he had in Tampa over here, which is part of the MO financially of the Marlins, you know, working, quote unquote, more with less. So we'll see how it plays out. I'm excited for the season, but more so cautiously optimistic. So we'll see just how it plays out. Remember, it's 162 games. A lot of stuff can happen. Teams have ups and downs. And, yeah, if they can have more ups and downs, we'll be fine. As long as we don't have, like, those nasty stretches of losing that we lose. Like, you know, like after the All-Star game last year, I think we lost
like 8 in a row or something.
Yeah. We need to keep that to a minimum. Because, you know, if that starts to happen frequently, you could forget about the season by the All-Star break.
For sure. You know, we'll see about Puck as well. You know, with relievers, you got 2 pitches normally. And, you know, let's see, as a starter, if he develops a third pitch, or, you know, I'm sure he's had one, but you know, as a reliever, you only need 2. But as a starter, you got to mix and match more, change your velocity, you know, change, you know, your location and just mix and match at the end of the day. So I'm excited to see how he does as a starter. terms of the offense, you think about this, Gabe. The Marlins, they lost Soler. They lost Joey Wendell. They lost, I forgot who now. I think Garrett Hampson, I think we talked about prior to the episode. But and then they replaced them with Nick Gordon, Tim Anderson, and now Avi Garcia is back because he didn't play practically at all last year. So I'm just saying, I mean, you know, and he's healthy now, and he's going to be taking on that DH role that Soler had. So you think about that. Obviously, Soler is the best player out of the bunch, or essentially, or the one who had the best season out of the bunch. But you know, you lose Joey Wendell and Garrett Hampson and Yuli Gurriel, but you replace them with guys like Tim Anderson and Nick Gordon. I get it, all of them except minus maybe Yuli and Garrett Hampson. You know, but they were bench players. All of them, they're not, you know, they're all kind of in the similar boat. They're all kind of similar players. But I kind of like the acquisition of Gordon, the trade acquisition, and then the signing of Anderson, because you get two infielders. Anderson plays second and short. Nick Gordon is a utility guy all around. Nick Gordon's a lefty. Tim Anderson's a righty. So you're getting, you know, depth. You're getting different positions and from both sides of the plate. So, you know, how can I think Nick Gordon can be better than Joey Wendell was for the Marlins. And I think, you know, Tim Anderson, I think he's determined. He has a lot to prove. The Marlins signed him, I think it was like $5 million or something like that. It was a 1-year deal. So, you know, low risk, high reward type of signing. And he's not projected to be the starter anyway. So less pressure on him. He can probably help him improve, you know, offensively. So, but yeah, pretty much if you go all around the diamond and you go up and down the starting rotation, there's a question mark for every player practically, which is that's the you know, concerning part for me. Very, except for like maybe Jesus. But even for like a lot of it's health though related, I feel like. But still though, that's kind of like it is. And when you don't make any moves and when you have such a really, really, really depleted farm system, the Marlins are in no man's land. They're in an MLB purgatory right now. So, and they're going to have to roll what they got. But I agree with you. You kind of convinced me in your explanation a little bit, Gabe, when you mentioned if everything clicks and the rotation holds together, even without Sandy, because they can. They have the ability to, you know, to still compete without Sandy. It's going to be tough, but they have the arms to do it. Yeah, I can see him scrapping and clawing for a 500 record. Still not enough to make the playoffs, but it's not that massive drop off that many people are expecting. You know, the Marlins are given a bad hand right now going into the season. They are, but that doesn't mean they can come out of the game, you know, not with, you know, losing all their money, you know, and then not being able to cash out anything. So there is stuff to look forward to this season. Tanner Scott, as I mentioned, Christian Betancourt, you know, I think he's going to help as well and add something as offensively. Everyone's talking about his defense and you know, limiting the running game, which is great, but you got to perform a little bit. And it's the Marlins catching offensively set a really low, really low bar last year, really low bar. So if he can just do slightly better than that, then it's a win for the Marlins in terms of that and that acquisition. So I'm looking forward to it. And the speed factors you mentioned as well, Gabe, is going to be huge. Nick Gordon, as I mentioned, he's a speedster. Tim Anderson can swipe a couple bases. They have John Birdie, Jazz. You know, losing Garrett Hampson kind of stings because of that, because he was so great. And he was actually 12th on the Marlins last year in wins above a replacement. So he did have a pretty big role here. So I'm kind of curious how the Marlins, you know, round off their bench. You know, Griffin Conine's a name that's being thrown around. Obviously, you mentioned Trey Mancini. He can crack the opening day roster. But other than that, health is the biggest thing for me. That's kind of like, if this team can stay healthy, yeah, then they can compete. But if things aren't clicking right out of the gate, it's going to be a long, long season. And we're going to see just, you know, Marlins being sellers with what they do have left of this team. You know, this is a make or break time for Avi Garcia as well. I can see the Marlins cutting ties with him midway through the season if things aren't panning out. So yeah, it's just a lot of question marks that need to be answered and really haven't been answered at all in spring training. And Marlins have regressed actually in spring training, and injuries are the main factor, but still it is a regression at the end of the day. So it's just been a very gloomy off season of spring training. And Gabe, I want to see them finish 500, obviously, and be competitive, but it's so fragile it's being the foundation is so fragile going into this season that one or two little hiccups, one or two more injuries, and they're going to be maybe a 70 to 75 win team at best. So it's just things, they're on pins and needles right now, as they say. And that's not good when you're going into the season. It shouldn't be like that. Things like that happen when you're just torn and getting battered. Your roster is getting, you know, littered with injuries, but that happens in the middle of the season. So I want to believe in you, Gabe, but it's tough for me.
Oh yeah. They're in a very precarious situation. And for some more rosy news, Soler is currently hitting 350 in spring training. So yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they're going to miss him. And then for the farm system, according to the rankings on MLB, as of right now, they're ranked 29th. Last year, at around this time, they were 18th. And by the midseason, they were 24th. In other words, the cupboard is empty.
Yeah, they traded their top pitching prospect, or one of their top pitching prospects, Jake Eater, to acquire Jake Berger.
Yeah.
You know, from the White Sox. So, and that's been the Marlins formula, because that's how that was the only way to get like these free agents, I mean, or to get these veteran players or players that are, you know, under team control for a few years, like Jake Berger is. You have to get rid of your prospects. And that is not a winning formula if you're a small market team. So I understand when you say in Bendix we trust, because they have an identity from a front office standpoint on how they need to approach their farm system. So that's good. So we're not going to be trading top prospects and prospects in general just to get rental players or veterans for one or two years. A plan is in place, which is good. But in Bendix, do we trust? We'll see. Kim had a rough go at it at first. She did. She had like her bumps and bruises when she first came to Miami. She did turn it around and she did do what she thought was best for this team, which led to a postseason appearance in a very long time. So there was a sense of growth and improvement at her position that while she was with the Marlins, and the same can be applied for Peter in his new role and in his new job here in Miami. You can't expect everything to be great and, you know, happy-go-lucky after one season, and you can't you know, put any blame on Peter at all, I feel like, into the season, because it is a huge, huge transition for this organization. So they're playing with what the cards they're given, and they're letting it ride at the end of the day. And it can be exciting. They can be spoilers, and they can be a scrappy, fun team, but small ball is the name of the game for them. And because they don't have many guys who can hit out of the park. It's a big ask to rely on Avi Garcia to stay healthy for the full season and provide 20 to 25 home runs. Can he do it? Absolutely. He's shown it in the past in his career. But it's been a long time since he's been a consistent MLB player because of health-related issues. Josh Bell, I think he's going to get you 20 home runs. And if he's their most consistent hitter, I feel like, on that team. Jake Berger is going to strike out a lot, but he's going to hit a lot of hard contact, though. He's going to connect for home runs, but he's going to strike out a lot and have a low batting average. And then Jazz, it all clicks with him because he's so dynamic when he's healthy and he's on fire. Because he can steal bases, he's electric, and in the outfield, he's improving so much rapidly, which is great to see. But he's got to be a consistent hitter, and he's coming off a really poor postseason, really really poor postseason performance. So it's not the greatest outlook right now for spring training. There is still time left, but at the end of the day, their record doesn't really matter. You know, spring training is almost done. We're going to actually provide some spring training updates at the facility at Roger Dean Stadium this week, and I will be there representing Lemon City Live. So for our listeners tuning into this episode, stay tuned on our website and on our social media platforms for spring training updates and interviews with players and coaches. But yeah, I think that's going to do it here, Gabe, for this episode. I know it's not the most bright and most sunshine and rainbow type of episode, but hey, it's just spring training at the end of the day. So Gabriel Garcia, final thoughts, final comments for season 2, episode 3 of First Pitch 305.
So my final thoughts are, when it comes to Bendix, I have faith in him in the long term. I think we'll be fine in the long term. Me too. I have faith on in the team, at least right now. I have faith in the team for the season. Let's see how I feel come – let's see how I feel after a month of games. Let's see how much of a cold take this might be. But you know who I don't have faith in? Avi. I almost want to say, and I want to do a list with you later of like firsts and stuff like that. But I almost want to say, I think that by the trade deadline, actually, no, I think that by May, we'll have cut ties with Avi. I think by May, we'll have cut ties. I have faith in the Marlins season. I have faith in Bendix. So there's faith short term and long term. But the one thing I do not have faith in is Avi. Unfortunately, I do not see him getting back to his old ways. And I predict, and I want to be wrong because I never want to see a player, you know, get cut.
Of course. To be honest. Of course.
Like, I never root for a guy to fail. But I honestly think that Avi will struggle. He's going to stay where he's at right now. And they're going to cut ties with him by May. I really do. I'm pessimistic.
I can see that.
I want to be wrong, you know, for the sake of a player. I never want to root for a guy to fail, but I'm very pessimistic. If there's one area I'm really pessimistic in, it's that one.
I know Avi hasn't been the biggest fan biggest fan for Marlins fans on Twitter. Especially he's gotten a lot of, you know, ridicule, and I get it. It's just, you know, you're a big free agent signing, and it really hasn't gone your way. It's going to that comes with the territory with fans online and things like that. And I wouldn't be surprised, Gabe. You're right. If he's not performing well and struggling, that the Marlins cut ties with him by the All-Star break. You know, it's just one of those things that you have to. It's kind of like Chen, Wei-Yin Chen, when he was here with the Marlins. Similar deals in the 4-year, $60 million or 4-year, $80 million type. I think it was one of those two numbers. And the Marlins, he didn't complete his contract with the team. The Marlins cut ties with him. It's unfortunate because, you know, as I mentioned, they're a small market team. So when you're letting go players like that and you're cutting ties with them, it stings even more because that's a lot of money, right? They're throwing pretty much out the window.
Yeah, we can't afford mistakes like that at all.
Exactly.
As a small market team, those have to be avoided at all costs.
For sure. You're absolutely right, Gabe. And that's why with Peter coming in, I do agree with you in that sense. He does bring a different approach on signing players. Tampa Bay was so pinpoint in particular with their free agent signings. As I mentioned in one of my previous episodes from this season of the podcast, the Tampa Bay approach was develop the young talent, create a core, and then you sprinkle in free agent acquisitions on you know, reasonable low-term deals to plug in the holes for that young core that's been assembled. And that's been the formula for the Rays since the beginning of their success as a franchise in the mid-2000s, in the Longoria era, and James Shields, and that's they developed a core. Scott Kazmir, that's all Rays players and Rays development. And then the same thing again within the last like 5 to 6, 7 years in that organization of constant playoff appearances in a very tough AL East division. And so that's where my faith relies in Bendix, he has shown that he can compete in a tough division with a very, very small budget and relying on a lot of development and young talent. And if that's finally we have an identity, because that's been kind of in the Mattingly era. And it's not his fault. I'm just saying that in that time frame, the Marlins never really had an identity. It was, are we a pitching team? Are we an offensive team with a stacked outfield of Yelich, Ozuna, Stanton? Like, it was just, and then, you know, this 5-year plan with Jeter, when is it going to end? It was, you know, is there going to be any improvement? So at least there's an identity with this franchise and how they're going to approach off seasons, trade deadlines, and just their team from top to bottom, specifically in the minor league level. So yeah, Gabe, I appreciate you having me on. It's been really, really fun. We're going to be, you know, doing, as you mentioned, double barrel action for Marlins games this season. I'm excited. We had a great time, by the way, for our listeners covering the Caribbean series here at Miami. It's one of probably the most electric and fun atmospheres I've been in Lone Depot Park / Marlins Park. I've never been in a crowd like that ever at that stadium. It was a lot of fun covering that that series with Gabe. He does an incredible job for Lemon City Live. So not only does he cover the Marlins, don't forget, guys, he covers UM baseball, FIU baseball. He's just a baseball, South Florida baseball guru. So I'll have him on another time to talk about college baseball and local college baseball. It's going to be a really good time. I'm looking forward to seeing his work as well. with UM and FIU. And Gabe, I appreciate you, my man. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me, bro. Can't wait to see what the season brings. Hopefully more ups than downs. And hopefully a fan base that, you know, doesn't start dooming and glooming by, say, May. Because if not, it's going to be a real long season. Real long.
And harping back to the beginning of this episode, the Marlins better start getting some superstitions of their own, because they're going to probably need it. And that's going to do it here for episode 3 of season 2 of First Pitch 305. Don't forget, guys, you can listen to this podcast wherever you catch them, whether it's Apple or Spotify, or even if you want to tune in to the website at lemoncitylive.com, you can listen and watch this podcast on the website. That's Gabriel Garcia at Gabe Wright Sports. I'm Alex Aguirre at Aguirre the Cap 33. And remember, guys, let's go fish. La bola se va elevando.